The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
Welcome along to the GAA Hour. This is the football show sponsored by AIB. Lads, the news that was kind of slipped under the radar amid all the Dermot Connolly controversy is Ryan Burns, who's also received a 12-week ban for minor physical interference with an umpire this time, not the referee. And I'm not going to lie, I have a lot of sympathy on Ryan Burns because I've seen this incident. Now, there was no trial by television. There was no Sunday game panellist influencing anybody. Now, he was given a red card on the day, and that led to the 3-month ban. But he brought his case to the CHC, the same as Dermot Connolly, and got nowhere with him. So he got no hearing to bring it any further. So he's given up. Very same as Dermot Connolly. One situation is being blamed that's been completely influenced by the media. The other has been ignored by the media, and they've the same outcomes. You know what I mean? So, and when I see Ryan Burns' case, I see a fellow who's incredibly frustrated on an end line about 20 metres from an umpire. Like, I mean, don't tell me this fella thought he was going to hit the umpire with the ball. I thought he was just kicking it in anger. I'd be surprised if he thought he was hitting the umpire with the ball.
I haven't personally seen the incident,
right.
So
okay,
can't really comment on it. But what I will say is I've often been in that situation where, you know, you have been frustrated and angry with maybe a decision that has gone against you, and you do lash out and kicking the ball in anger, but you don't mean, or there's no intent to hit an umpire or to hit any of your opponents or whatever by it. But so by listening to you, I believe that could be the case with Ryan Burns.
Yeah, he hit him in the back with the ball, didn't he? Like, I mean, it's a good shot if you're able to hit an umpire in a fit of rage like that with the ball. What's your
it's a tough one to make such a grey area over, though, if we want to keep it black and white, because then this is when the problems start. I mean, he kicked the ball in the direction of the umpire in frustration, so it's...
Was it at the goals? Was it at the... I don't know. I think he has a case. Like, I think he has a case because this is a grey area. We don't know if he did it or not. Whereas Dermot Connolly pushed, you know what I mean? There's no grey area in that. So you could actually, I would say Ryan Burns has a really much stronger case to go to the CHC and say, I want a hearing here, because genuinely, hand on my heart, I was just frustrated. I didn't want to hit the umpire. And you could actually have a good argument here over and back, and no one would be right or wrong. Only Ryan Burns would know the answer to it.
Yeah, but then maybe that's maybe it's a good example of the GAA. It's tough on Ryan Burns, but it's like, we are not going to tolerate this stuff, because we always say that the problem is when it gets down to club level then, and the stuff seeps in. And like, if it's happened twice in the last couple of weeks in the inter-county game, what's going to happen in a junior match in Armagh somewhere?
Yeah, no, and that's true. But the point I'm trying to make is that the idea that the CCCC is influenced by what pundits say, I think that's nonsense. I think it's an awful disrespect to the CCCC, you know, who are competent in what they do, to think that, oh, right, we're just so dumb that whatever incident is highlighted by the Sunday game. The Sunday game highlight incidents that are big talking points in the game. Everybody already sees them, so you're already in trouble, and the Sunday game can't possibly ignore these big incidents. Yeah. So there'll never really be a case where the CCCC punishes something that the Sunday game won't already have seen, because it's these big talking points. Because if you're going to get a suspension, it's a big thing in the game, and someone's going to start talking about it. Yeah. So like, it's unfair on that body to say that they're so, you know, stupid that they have to wait to see what the Sunday game say.
Yeah, but I do believe that you know, sometimes in the Sunday game there is an over analysis on certain incidents, and I'd rather see an over analysis on an actual exciting part of the match instead of, you
the
know,
incidents,
an
yeah.
incident that happened.
Yeah, no, and that's a fair point. Do you know where there's a lot of over analysis, lads? And I'll use this example: manager comments. I've seen people try to say that Jim Gavin was trying to create a siege mentality, and this has been out along a lot of people saying this. I've never heard anything more stupid in all my life. Number one, Jim Gavin is a standoff manager. He is not a hands-on manager who gets lads going with these rousing speeches. He's all about the process. He's robotic. He gets his coaches to do a lot of the training for him. He doesn't have a close relationship with his players. Therefore, Jim Gavin is not the siege mentality type. And number two, if he did want to create a siege mentality, in their eyes, Dermot Connolly has been wronged. He can create that without ever going in front of cameras and not interviewing anyone. If you wanted to create the siege mentality, which I don't believe Jim Gavin ever would, he can do that without going in front of the media and making a show of himself. Yeah, do you get me? You don't have to bring it that far.
I understand that. Did Jim Gavin not actually answer every question that was put to him in the...
He didn't do one-on-ones.
He didn't do one-on-ones, but no. He still answered every question that was put to him in the open forum.
He did.
So he did. So, you know, that to me is doing the manager's job. You know, he never, you know... He didn't decide at that point, and I'm not going to talk to any particular individual here, I'm not going to turn a blind eye to any reporter, so he answered every question correctly.
Well, it was a protest, Stevie, because he wouldn't do the one-on-one, so it was clearly a protest.
But the other point is the siege mentality point. I think Jim Gavin is smart enough to look at different nuggets and different ways of trying to motivate his team and players, and I know the Jim McConnelly incident is the perfect example, but certainly when you're going for three in a row, you need to try to get every advantage that you can possible, and this is probably another way of Dublin and Jim Gavin seeing that this is an opportunity.
And that's fair enough, and I'd agree with that, but why did he need to do the media thing? That is already done in training by saying we've been screwed here, our best player's gone. You don't have to do the media, that silly little protest that he did. That didn't serve any purpose. The siege mentality can be created. Now, there's another way of saying it. Eamon McGee, and I completely agree with him, writing in The Star, says, I would think it's a hard sell for Gavin to convince all players that everybody wants them to fail. Players can smell bullshit a mile away, and there's a whiff of that of what Gavin's been saying. The idea that, you know, everybody's against us, and this siege mentality, I think siege mentalities, while teams do it, I think a lot of players see through that kind of stuff. Like, I mean, you know, a lot of players will go, hang on a minute. Like, I mean, you know, he did push the ref. I don't think Pat Bland said all that much wrong. You know, I think trying to force this on players, I think it's an insult to their intelligence sometimes.
Yeah, maybe when you're in that bubble though, when your best player's getting 12-week bans, it's easy to sort of get a reaction. And perhaps after winning by 31 points, he used that timing to say, trying to take him down a peg or two, and even just to galvanise him a bit more, because he's listened for the last 2 years, people saying how great they are and how brilliant they are and how unbeatable they are. So, like, Stevie's maybe right. He's trying to come across it as a different angle. I don't think it was very smart or a surprise, because he's a very smart man, like, considering the incident.
I don't know him well enough to know he's a very smart man, but he's not good with the media. He's a pilot, so he obviously has intelligence.
No, but I mean what he's done with Dublin in the last,
okay, as a manager. Yeah, he's clearly a good manager. But he's very awkward in front of the media, and he's very, very, he acts a bit strange in front of the media, and I think his performance on Sunday was bizarre. It was absolutely bizarre.
That's probably what makes Jim Gavin unique, is that he isn't the outspoken manager that we've become accustomed to in Gaelic games in particular, especially for successful managers. You know, he does things quietly and effectively in the background, and he's happy for that to continue, and maybe that's his way, and it's a way that, you know, he's got the formula right, and it's a way that he sees that works for him on the Dublin setup.
Yeah, so Kevin Walsh came out, the Galway manager, and he's backing up Jim Gavin, and he says he's 100% right to protect his players. I've no idea how he was protecting his players, but that's neither here nor there. There's places for those things to be dealt with, whether it's a yellow card or black card, whatever. No trial by television jury. Again, he is right in what he is saying to protect his player. Now, Kevin Walsh would have his own axe to grind with the Sunday game after what Eamon O'Hara said about him, and I thought that was a very unfair comment at the time. But if it was Eamon's honest opinion, is he allowed to say it? But I think Kevin Walsh did such a good job with Sligo at the time, I thought maybe it was sour grapes on Eamon's part, because Eamon didn't make the... picking Eamon or whatever. So that was it. So he's got his own axe to grind. So he's getting the boot in by trial by television jury. But what's this trial by television jury, lads? Like, why is this being put out there that you actually can't say a word about players? So Kevin went on anyways and says, that allows amateur journalists, if you like, to have another bounce and whack off stuff for another few weeks. To be honest...
That's insulting.
Yeah. To be honest, the less I say, the better. So remind me not to ring Kevin Walsh anytime soon for the GR. That's why I don't say too much, because I'm not going out there making headlines for people who want headlines. And I don't really know what game Kevin Walsh is playing there. Like, I mean, okay, he's in the manager's union. He's saying he's protecting the players. I don't see how Jim was protecting Dear McConnelly. I would imagine Dear McConnelly was embarrassed by what Jim Gavin was saying about him dragging it all up again when it was already done. Dear McConnelly, according to Twitter, was up at bloody C sessions for the weekend trying to get away from the whole thing, meeting Jason Quigley. The last thing he wanted up there was people tapping him on the shoulder going, Jesus, all kicking off about you down there again. Yeah. Like, I mean, imagine being up there. You know, you'd be absolutely fuming with your manager for that.
Yeah, I would say the whole, you know, razzmatazz and the media spotlight on Jim McConnelly over the last month has probably left him pretty embarrassed. You know, he probably wanted dealt with as soon as possible and let him continue with whatever he's going to do for the remainder of the year.
And the thing about Dear McConnelly, lads, is I've interviewed him, and Dear McConnelly doesn't, all this nonsense last year about him being targeted, he's embarrassed by that kind of talk. He said, what do you expect Lee Keegan to do to me? Do you expect him to let me run through on goals? Do you expect me to let him run through on goals? Dear McConnelly isn't interested in all this hullabaloo. I would say after that Carlow game, because he admitted working on his temper, I would say he went, damn it, lost my head, and now I'm going to have to face consequences. And it was Jim Gavin wanted to go to CHC. I'd say Dear McConnelly is going, why did you start this debate up again?
Yeah, and the unfortunate thing for Connolly compared to this Ryan Burns case is that it was a big game. It was televised live on TV. It was on a Saturday night as well, so it was standalone. He's playing for the All-Ireland champions. He's probably, I think, the best player in the country, so it's going to create a lot more traction. He's got a reputation, so As Jim Gavin might point out now, you know, this is a imbalance here, like there's an agenda against Connolly and that, but I think that's natural when you're coming from where he's coming from, you're playing for who he's playing for, and you are who he is, and it was missed in the match as well. Like, I genuinely don't think, as much as I love Connolly, I don't think there was an imbalance in this sort of coverage.
I don't either, I really don't. But anyways, during the week, Kieran Kilkenny was at an event. I'm not going to say what event, because I didn't get to interview him at this event, but because I've been critical of Kieran Kilkenny on the podcast only about his style of play and how I think he could, you know, be a lot better than the kind of safe hand passing player that he is sometimes, I said I'd ask the PR crowd to run it past Kieran to see was Kieran okay with the interview or whatever, just not to be awkward if he was a bit annoyed with me or of anything that I've said. So the PR company got on to Kieran Kilkenny, and Kieran Kilkenny says, I'm not sure what his response exactly was, but Kieran Kilkenny says, I'll have to ask Dublin media guy, which is this fella called Shep. Now, I've got some history with Shep. He's a fella who's a little bit full of his own importance in my dealings with him. But Kieran got word back to the PR crowd that he's not allowed to talk to me, which was bizarre, because it was only going to be, I wasn't even going to mention Dear McConnelly to him. I wasn't interested in that at this stage, because I know he'd said nothing. I want to talk to him about his role in the team, and, you know, some stats you had done, Conan, about how a lot of his passes are sideways and backwards, and, you know, just why he plays like that, and is it coached or whatever like this. So it might have been an alright interview. But I'm banned from obviously talking. I was told I was banned by this Dublin media manager, and I'm pretty sure it's all stemming from the Jim Gavin interview I did a few years ago, where the week after I did that interview, the funny thing about that interview is me and Jim had a chat walking out of Parnell Park that day. Jim had no problem. After the interview, I said to Jim, are you okay with that? Because I was pressing you on it. And he says, Wooly, you've got your job to do, I've got mine, no problem at all. So we walked out having a chat, got on grand. The media manager wasn't there, and then the interview went out and Jim came across, let's be honest, not great. And then News Talk got word that News Talk were banned from interviewing anybody after the Leinster final against Westmeath. This was 2 years ago. So, like, I mean, this is kind of bully boy tactics that this Dublin media manager kind of engages in. So not only was I banned, but the whole radio station was banned, which would have, if News Talk hadn't been understanding with me at the time, that would have put a lot of pressure on me, as in, look what you're after doing, you know what I mean, if bosses and stuff. Yep. So they're continuing on, this Dublin media manager is continuing on this kind of nonsense that I'm not allowed to interview the Dublin players. I don't think it helps anybody. I think people should be bigger than a little bit of criticism or a genuine interview that I would have done with Jim back then. And I think everybody deserves criticism at times, and some people are a little bit too sensitive to it.
Yeah, I would say it's not just Jim Gavin and Dublin though in this case. I mean, I remember last year I was down in Mayo, Castlebar, and I'm not going to dig up well or anything, he dived or not, but I went home and wrote an article saying a dive should be a red card. But I was trying to create a sense of the atmosphere down in Castlebar just to see sort of how this came about, and I think some of the words I used was like, the Mayo fans were baying for blood, their nostrils were flaring, their eyes were bulging, and I had, you know, had all this in the article. Got an email from Mayo PRO to say I didn't see any of this happening, and, you know, wanted a retraction from all this, you know. So, and anyway, in a way you can understand, because I'm having a go with the player, I'm saying he dived, it's embarrassing, should be a red card. So I can understand why people then sort of stand up for their own man in that sense. It's happened in Derry when I worked there before, like people banning you from talking to players before games, and then getting a hump when you actually do talk to a player. It's a lot easier in Derry to get players, but yeah, so it's definitely not just Dublin. It happens all over Ireland.
Yeah, I think it's just this oversensitivity and this inability to accept some criticism, or inability to accept it. Like, there's another manager, who I won't go into, I had a pretty good relationship, but I've criticised recently and I didn't get a reply back to a recent text. Do you know what I mean? So it's very hard to give an honest opinion, and that's why I have a lot of sympathy for Spillane and O'Rourke and these lads who go on to Sunday game. And if you're going to go on to Sunday game and be cheerleaders to players and cheerleaders to managers because you might have met them once or twice, so you're not being genuine and you're not doing your job, and nobody wins in that scenario. So exactly. Like, I mean, you have to be able. And I remember from my own career, Stevie, I didn't like being criticised. I took the hump with Martin McHugh, with Joe Brolly, with loads of different lads that criticised me, and I said, they're going in my book. I always remembered it. But sure, what did they say really that was wrong? Like, I mean, maybe Brolly a little bit, but sure, that's Brolly.
At the end of the day, they are doing their job. And you mentioned Martin McHugh there, and you know, as a player, Martin McHugh ridiculed me during one of our, I think it was the 2004, it was a game that we played against Donegal or somebody in 2004, and he went through me for a shortcut at half time of that particular game, and I heard wind of
and
this.
You would get really thick though, wouldn't you?
At the time I got thick, and I heard wind of Martin McHugh going through me, and the same at full time, when in fact I actually watched the game over afterwards. I wrote down exactly everything that I'd done.
You didn't really take it to heart now.
This is the extent that I went to,
I wrote down
every play that I was involved in, and I had it in my pocket right for about a year and a half. Not that I've ever seen Martin McHugh, because I met him quite often after that, and I've done some media work with Martin McHugh, and I never ever held a grudge, but it was my motivation for a year and a half or 2 years, whatever, to continue to improve as a player. And I think players actually need to look at themselves sometimes and take, you know, criticism on the chin and learn from it. And at that point, yes, I was annoyed with what somebody was saying to me or somebody was saying about me and about my game, but at the end of the day, I used it in a way that I was going to become a better player off the back of it. And I did meet Martin McHugh at an Irish News Awards quite soon after that, and had a conversation with him, never brought it up
12 years later,
and moved on. No, but it's, you've been criticised by Martin McHugh, the same man, but at the end of the day, you know, these guys are given their opinion, and that's what they believe is the right thing at the time, and you move on. You have to accept that, and that's the way it is.
That's the way it is. But the difference in this scenario, and this is how it's gone, so if this was Kieran Kilkenny and I got the PR to ask Kieran Kilkenny, do you want to talk to me, and Kieran went no, I would completely understand where he comes from, and I have to take the hit on that, you know, that he took the hump on what I said, and me being an ex-player, I would exactly know where he's coming from, because I used to get the hump on it, so that's grand. But him getting an instruction not to do it, that's it, that's bringing it into a completely different ballgame. That's not like not treating him like a man and not treating him like an adult.
And it's not even an instruction from Jim Gavin, it's an instruction from their PR manager, which is ridiculous altogether. Yeah. You know what I mean? At the end of the day, you know, we want to hear what players have to say. We want to hear what players have to say. As a player, an ex-player, you know, I loved giving my opinion to the media, because it was putting me out there, and I was getting my, you know, thoughts written down and put out to the public forum. At the end of the day, some players love that, and some players thrive in that and want that. And I don't think we hear enough of, or see enough of players nowadays giving actual interviews and getting their actual thoughts on how things are going.
Yeah, no, I'd agree. But we leave that there, lads. I want to give you a quick update on my own football career, lads, because this is, I think the whole nation is waiting for an update on this.
What age are you actually?
39. I'm 39.
I'm 37, retired, I'm never coming back.
Right, so I went back training with Portlaoise on Thursday night. It was a lovely feeling, I have to say, to be back up kicking around with the lads. And I'm not in the worst shape in the world. I'll get a little bit better. But my whole thing is that I want to play intermediate this year, right? So we all know, I've said on the podcast before about this stupid rule. It's a leash bylaw that won't allow, if the last game I played in 2011, December 2011, was a senior game, then I can't play intermediate without being regraded. Anyways, by the time I decided I want to play intermediate, it was gone past the February 28th date for regrading. So now, my options are now, is that I can appeal this rule under an exceptional circumstance in the interest of promotion of Gaelic games, and I could seek deviation under rule 3.59b, right? Mm-hmm. So 3.59b is an exceptional circumstance. So I can go to Central Council and say to them, this is an exceptional circumstance. This fella hasn't played in 6 years. He's 39. You know, for the sake of promoting the game, you know, he can help out with the team, whatever. It's in the interest of the game just to allow this fella play intermediate. Anyways, so this is the gas thing about the GAA, and it would absolutely drive you up the wall. The Central Council meeting was on June the 17th, right? There's not another one until August. So this was trying to be sorted out for this June 17th meeting. Now, the rule 3.59b states that a county committee or higher council of the association outside of Ireland may in writing to send may send in writing to central council for permission to deviate from a specific rule. Now, the important thing here is a county committee. Now, wait until you get this. The Laois County Committee has to bring this case to central council. I can't do it. The county board can't do it. The county committee. The county committee only sits 8 times per year. The county committee did not sit in June. I could not get this case to go to central council for the June 17 meeting. Now the next central council meeting, which I can bring it to, isn't until the middle of August, and there'll be 2 rounds of the intermediate championship already played. So I'm completely gone here. Like, I'm gone. It's just a waste of my time.
Think of how fresh you'll be coming into the important stage of the season.
I'll be back for a quarter final, having not played for 6 years, and after having missed the first rounds, I have no chance.
You'll
of getting
pretty fresh at that stage.
that'll be, if I come on and play well, geez, he was fresh. That's 6 years. That's
isn't he flam fit?
That break did him the world of good. Right, well, listen, I just thought I'd give you an update on that. Like, I mean, Jesus, there's such this
what process. Position do you intend to go back and play?
Full forward, I'd say. Like, I mean, you know, that's
you still have that ambition for a fullback to be hanging and clawing off
there,
you.
I don't need to hear this. Fullbacks aren't like cornerbacks. They generally don't mark you that tightly. Full forward,
they have
the perfect
a conversation with you and ask you where you're going later on.
yeah. And at intermediate, it'd be a big lump of a fella and I'd be able to get away from him.
Who's the full forward in the team? Does he know you're planning on playing there?
Oh, I haven't really said where I want to play. But look, listen. I'm not going to dictate where I'm going to play, lads. I'm open to the manager.
We
wherever
know that,
the manager,
you're not going to play.
We all know I'm a team player. Well, and that's just the way it
if
is.
If I was going to come out of retirement, I'd be first thing I'd be saying to any manager, please do not play me in the full forward line, please. I don't want to be going back to have anyone clawing and hanging out of me. Yeah, enough of that throughout my career.
You're snookered then, though. The half forward line are bloody workers. They're all Brian Doers prototypes.
Well, not
there.
All, you know. You can maybe stand at 11 and pull the strings.
Yeah, that's the only okay. I'll go 11 and pull the strings. I'll pull strings all day. Right, listen, we'll be back and we'll actually talk about some of the games at the weekend. Dearie, great to finally get to interview you.
Oh, really, yeah.
why
is it great?
Why do you not do many interviews?
I don't know, really. I haven't been asked to do a whole pile.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me? I know we spoke about the defensive side of things. If you're coming in and you want to be, if you want to be the Woolly Parkinson and just play for myself, and an inter-county corner forward isn't just patching inside either. Unfortunately for you, Woolly, it won't last forever. You can ask ex-players that. You can ask you know that yourself, Woolly.
Yeah, mine never started at all.
Yeah, well, that's neither here nor there.
AIB, backing club and county.
Darragh O'Shea is writing in the Irish Times again this week, and we're big fans of Darragh O'Shea's column, but he's taken cute tourism to new levels this week. I read it all, but I found it hard to swallow what he was trying to sell me. He was trying to basically say that Cork are going to win by a couple of points. But the one part that I really took exception to, like, he's trying to base this on saying they hit rock bottom by scraping past Waterford and then found a new rock bottom by only scoring a point in the first half against Tipperary. One thing we can be sure of, they can't go any lower. Now just remember that, they can't go any lower. I'm just looking at this as a player. Who wouldn't love to be in that position? Well, I'm telling you, Dara, as a player, I would love not to be in that position where I can't get any lower. Like, I mean, I know the only way is up, and that's very obvious logic. But you can easily go up. But going up far enough to be able to beat the second best team in the country, like, yeah, is the hardest sell I've ever heard.
Well, there's two ways of looking at it. You know, from a player's point of view, there's a way that it's Cork against Kerry, and it has to be some incentive for a player to get motivated, yeah, and get the drive within themselves for it. And the other way of looking at it is, you know, having the doubts in their head and saying, you know, we have been playing poor football to date so far. How are we ever going to lift it to play against one of the teams in the country and get ourselves up for this final? You know, this could potentially be an annihilation. And, you know, so it's trying to get the happy medium in between correct from a player's point of view and going at it. And I suppose from a Cork's point of view, they really have nothing to lose because they have been pretty poor In their previous two games in the Munster Championship to date, and very fortunate in the end against Tipperary to come away with a win, because the goal that they conceded at the end should have been the nail in the coffin from a Tipperary point of view.
Yeah.
But you have to give Cork some credit. They had great resolve and within a matter of 30-40 seconds had the ball in the back of the Tipperary net, so you know they might get some reward from that particular moment of play in itself.
Yeah, and we saw the Paul Kerrigan comments, and like, okay, there's no doubt Cork are not going to be lacking motivation here, right? Because they've been slated right throughout the country. Now, they weren't lacking motivation for the Tipperary game and they didn't seem to give them the lift, but maybe they got over those two. And I saw their manager, Pat O'Healy, saying that they get a lot of confidence from the two wins. I don't think they'll get confidence from those two wins. In actual fact, I think it would have the opposite effect. Like, beating Waterford, scraping over Waterford is not something that's going to improve your confidence. And then just getting a goal in the last minute to beat Tipperary isn't going to do much for your confidence. So I'm not really sure kind of where that's going to come from.
Yeah, they did only score a point or two in the first half of that particular game, but for long spells of the second half they were the dominant team against Tipperary. Yeah. And bear in mind, Tipperary did go to an All-Ireland semi-final last year. I know for that second half period they were missing Michael Quinlivan, who was a huge loss, but at the same time, you know, Cork, you know, outplayed Tipperary for most of that second half, and that's what, you know, provided them with the platform to kick on.
That's what they'll try to work on, is their second half against Tipperary. That's basically, if they want to try and build their confidence, they'll say this is what we're about this second half, and try and just wipe the first half against Tipperary and the Waterford game from their memory. Yeah, yeah. And say, look, this is what, because that's all you can do. Like, I mean, you can't go back to anything else to try and draw confidence from.
Yeah, like, motivation only take you so far as well. Like, it'll help you get into the game, it'll help the first 10 minutes maybe, but like, after that it's about the work that you have done, and after that it's about fitness and sharpness and the system and then the players you're playing against. And there's no way that over 70 minutes that, it's great, it's a great position going into a game and you've got nothing to lose, because like, it doesn't matter if Cork lose this match, because no one will care. They lost to Kerry, there's no shame in it, so they can go in with like no fear of it. But after 70 minutes it's going to add up to Kerry being a better team and Kerry being slicker and better drilled and fitter, like, and that's the way it's going to go.
And that's the reality of it, and you're right, that's a good point on the motivation. And like what Dara is saying is their only place is up. But like, I mean, I just don't see the logic of that, because their confidence isn't where it should be. And I've been on lots of Leash teams where our confidence isn't where it should be. And you can build yourself up all you want. We're up for this. We're back. The confidence is back. And you can, like, they'll use the second half against Tipperary. Remember, in Leash, we might even use a challenge game to convince ourselves we're back. Mm. But it only takes 15 minutes of a game to go three points down to go, oh, shit, maybe we're not back, you know, that kind of way. Or a difficult part of the game where Kerry reel off four or five in a row, which they're well capable of doing. Don't tell me Cork are going to go, geez, we're having a terrible year, you know, this kind of old fake confidence that we were trying to build up, that'll go out the window pretty quickly.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. You know, if I was going in to face Kerry in the Cork setup at the minute, I would be fearful. There's no ifs and buts about it. I would certainly be fearful, because you're watching a team who've won the National League, a team who breezed through their last game quite comfortably as well, and a team to have players that excite you when they get on the ball and know that they can cause serious havoc, and they've got a turn of pace in their forward line that will create havoc as well. And you know, you that would hit you with the fear factor, there's no doubt about it.
Yeah, and there's some issues here. Obviously Kerry in their last game, they had a disastrous start, they gave away a penalty, and it was a draw match at half time after playing with a strong wind, but they had a 10 week layoff, so you can understand maybe the cobwebs and stuff. And then in the second half they had a very really good performance and ended up beating Clare by 6 points in the end. But like, I mean, this is what Kerry are going to do against Cork. They'll play three on the full forward line: Geaney, James O'Donoghue, and Barry John Keane played the last time. It could be Stephen O'Brien the next time. Have Cork got the tactical nous to go, right, we'll play a sweeper in front there. They might play a sweeper, but if they're not intense enough around the middle third with three in there and a sweeper that's not fully coached on where he's meant to be, Kerry will just pick off the two men that he can't cover, you know, because a sweeper can cover two a lot easier than cover three, and it's a long width of a pitch to be covering three men. And I don't know, will Cork be tactically you know, clever enough to know how to deal with Kerry.
Cork will have to be probably ultra defensive, and that one sweeper won't be enough.
Yeah, and I don't think Cork can play that way. They've tried to play that way, and it doesn't seem to work for them.
Exactly, and the big difference for me is the return of James O'Donoghue, and he showed glimpses of his form from 2014 by the last day out, you know, coming out, showing for the ball, sharp turn, taking points, and that's what his game's on about, taking men on. You know, he's got blistering pace as well, and his movement, his very intelligent movement and the inside line will cause havoc for any Cork man marking him. But you know, he's got the smarts and along with Geaney to draw attention to the sweeper as well and drag him out of the way to create space inside for the other players.
Yeah, because I don't know who will drift around, and he could occupy the sweeper. And do you just see the know-how on the Cork sideline to go, I see what they're doing here, let's get another, you know what I mean, let's kind of change it up. I'm not sure that's there.
The conundrum they're facing reminds me of an interview that you did, Willie, with Jim McGuinness a couple of years ago. I think it was 2014 when he went in that great run out in the world, got to the final again. But you said to him before the Derry game, you weren't at yourself because you knew him, and you were saying like he just seemed a bit more nervous. And he said, I'll tell you why, because he always likens it to preparing for an exam. I mean, you don't have the work done, you know you're going in and you're trying to bluff and you're hoping certain questions come up.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, when he does have the work done, he didn't care what questions the exam threw at him. And this is something similar now. Like, Kerry have too much stuff to throw at Cork. They've got too much on the bench, they've too much different options on the pitch starting off. There's no way that Cork can prepare for this in 2 weeks and have the right answers for it. Like, they're trying to study the night before an exam and they don't have enough time.
I think that might be right. And then you look at their defenders and you say, who's going to pick up Geaney? Who's going to pick up James O'Donoghue? Who's going to pick up these danger men? And like, I mean, Shields has tried before. I mean, Cadigan has tried before. And those two lads never have good records marking these lads, because I don't think especially Cadigan's not a natural man marker, and for some reason they seem to put him on Kerry's danger man, and he can do well on Donaghy, spoiling Donaghy, but Cadigan's not built to be marking these kind of skillful, fast players, and that's what he's going to be facing Sunday. I don't think Cork have the man markers at the back. I don't think they have the forwards, but they're only averaging 111 against Tipperary and Cork. So like, there's a malfunction all over the over the Cork team.
What would Cork do now to have an Anthony Lynch back there, or Graham Candy back, Marshall in the whole defence? You know that's maybe what they're missing, a player with Anthony Lynch's ability to man mark. You know, he really thrived coming up against the Gooch and the top end.
Do you mark him as a matter of interest? He was a very, very sticky player,
very,
wasn't he?
Very tough player. He marked me.
Well, obviously,
a great competitor and a player that you knew every time you're going to face him, you're going to come up with a tough challenge, and the break even in that particular battle, you know, you're always doing quite well. So
really,
Cork are certainly lacking that type of player at the minute, and what they would do now to have a player of Anthony's ability to be in that full back line would be, you know, they would give anything almost at this stage, you know, going into a Munster final against the threat of the full forward line from Kerry.
Yeah, and I saw Dara Shea was kind of saying, predicting that Aidan Walsh and Alan O'Connor in midfield. Now, Alan O'Connor doesn't have the engine anymore to play a full game at midfield. He's definitely a good option to bring in, and he can inject that. I think he's actually good coming in. Aidan Walsh, like, I mean, it's not like Kerry are lacking in that department either. I mean, David Moran was out the last day, but he'll be back. And then you have Jack Barry, obviously, who's got full of energy and he's got all legs. And, like, I mean, Aidan Walsh should be looking around going, you know, this isn't a very easy job here, you know, and Alan O'Connor will come in. But like, I mean, I don't see Cork having the upper hand anywhere. Like, Dara's obviously trying to paint the picture that Cork have a really strong midfield by naming a good midfielder that was good five, you know, that was really top 5 years ago. But Alan O'Connor won't. I'd be surprised if Alan O'Connor starts.
There is no doubt.
Full game.
Listen, on paper, when you look at the players that Cork have available to them, there's quality players in there. But when you put them all together, collectively, we don't seem to get performances from them, and that's the difference. You put that Kerry, you put a Kerry jersey on all of those Cork names, and you'll probably get performances. You understand?
Yeah.
You know, that's the difference. Cork just don't seem to be able to get the right blend when they put all those quality players out on the field, and Kerry do.
Paul Kerrigan is the only one that's kind of consistently standing up as a leader, and you're kind of waiting for him to do it. I'm pretty sure he's playing centre half forward the last day against Tipperary, but he kind of led them back into that game, and he is one in fairness that is standing up and is being counted. And I know you had a cut off the Kerry media brigade recently, and like, I mean, you know, I think the talk was Gooch's first two or three articles were about Cork. You know, like in the Irish Examiner, and they've got issues with all this kind of stuff. And I remember us saying on a previous podcast that, Jesus, Paul, you're giving them enough ammunition to do it. They're not really saying anything that's not true. It's just they happen to be from Kerry.
Yeah, and actually I spoke to Donal Walsh last week, and I remember saying to him, is this a dangerous position for Kerry, because everyone's writing Cork off, no one's giving them a chance? And he just sort of said, well, we just prepare for Cork the way we always do. Like, we don't care how they're doing, we're just preparing for a team essentially, and we'll give Cork all the respect like they deserve or whatever. But
that's another point though. Like, if this was Tipperary, for example, you might say Kerry will underestimate them. Yeah. But Kerry, Cork are not going well, but Kerry will never underestimate them. So Cork are kind of, we're not making any case for Cork here at all.
And who picks up Kerry again? Is it Tadhg Morley or?
Probably Morley is a tagger in the half back line. Definitely, like Paul Murphy could pick him up either. There's no doubt about that. Or Crowley, those three in the half back line that played the last day. A criticism I would have of Kerry's half back line is they don't have enough danger going forward in that. I don't think Morley or Crowley are comfortable, you know, breaking forward and scoring. Murphy can, and it's great to see him back in the half back line. But you compare that to Dublin's half-back line, for example, you know, who are all comfortable going forward and clipping it over. I strongly believe in the modern game, your half-back line all have to be accurate shooters, accurate scorers, a real threat going forward. And I've said this before in the podcast, I think that's where Kerry are falling down.
Yeah, well, you know, I still wouldn't mind being in that Kerry team and Kerry setup, because they've got players who can defend as well, you know, when the pressure comes on.
Yeah, I suppose you have to have the balance of being able to defend as well. But like, I mean, you get some halfbacks that can do both.
Yeah, well, Paul Murphy has spent you know, a couple of seasons up in the half forward line as well.
So yeah, he's one that can do it. Yeah, and he's a big plus back there.
Exactly. The one player who can make a difference for Cork, going back to them this weekend, is obviously Paul Kerrigan. He is the team captain this year. He's led by example. He was the driving force in the second half revival against Tipperary. He kicked a couple of brilliant scores, and you know, he's got blistering pace. We all know about the pace that he has, and if he can penetrate the Kerry defence at all, you know, and get players coming along with him, you would give them a slight chance. But based on previous records, you know, you have to fancy Kerry heavily here.
Yeah, I think you're right. And like, if you do look at that Cork forward line, like, I mean, if Mark Collins come back in, he's been out. He scored a point off the bench the last day. You have Kerrigan, two top forwards. You've Colm O'Neill, three top forwards. You've John O'Rourke, industrious wing forward. You've Kelleher, full forward, a big lump of a fella. Mm. You have the mix of a good forward line there. Like,
Connolly,
I mean,
hit 1-2 the last day or something.
I have to say, I really love watching Colm O'Neill play. I think he's a brilliant player. He's a real goal getter as well.
And why are they not like, Cork are a team that would just make you pull your hair out. I know Jim McGuinness has said before, they have everything.
Yeah,
everything. He'd love to manage them, and they have now. They don't have what they had 3 years ago. They are a bit on the slide, but when we talked about them before, about how many Munster under 21 titles they have, like, I mean, I know the hurlers take a player or two, but like, I mean, surely if Jim McGuinness went down to manage Cork, they would shoot from where they are, being about 12th best in the country, up into the top five easily. Yeah. I'd imagine.
Listen, I mentioned it earlier on. You put them players' names on paper and you say, that's a good team. That is a good team. But would you put them out to play a match, and they don't seem to perform consistently enough, and that's why people have their doubts, and rightly so, about Cork. You know, you go through that forward line, you know, Colm O'Neill is one of the best corner forwards in the game. Is he getting enough service of the ball? Is he getting the right type of service of the ball? Does he perform at the highest level for Cork consistently enough? Probably not, but he's capable on his day of getting 1-2, 1-5, 1-6, 1-7, maybe more. You know, Paul Kerrigan is another one from the half forward line capable of kicking 4 or 5 points, but they need more consistency throughout the forward line. You know, they're still probably relying heavily on Donogh O'Connor coming in off the bench and having an impact, which Donogh O'Connor's probably 35-36 now.
He's a beautiful player though.
He's a great,
love him.
He's a brilliant player, a fantastic player, and has been a tremendous servant.
Yeah, but I get your point.
But he's 35 or 36. You know, Donogh O'Connor shouldn't be coming in to win games for Cork. He should be coming in to get them across the line and make them more composed in the last 10-15 minutes of a match, but certainly not coming in to get the important scores. That business should be left to the likes of Colm O'Neill and the other boys around him.
I think in a funny way, Donogh O'Connor, because he never had to need speed so much. It's he's more clever movement and brilliant finishing. They'd have probably even another couple of years left in Donegal O'Connor because of his style of play, you know.
Yeah, he is an exceptionally good player and one of the best penalty takers that I've seen in the last 20 years under extreme pressure, putting the ball away.
Right, okay. Listen, I've actually never really thought about his penalty taking. Nothing's jumping straight to me.
He scored many big penalties in big games, so he has. Okay,
really? Did he score a penalty against Cork in that All-Ireland final? No, he got three from playing that final, didn't he? I can't remember who got the. I'm not sure even Cork did get a goal. What's the predictions here, lads, for this one?
Kerry.
Yeah, but we're all Kerry. The handicap's -6. Are Cork going to trouble that handicap?
I don't think it's going to be. I don't think Kerry's going to win by any more than that. I would say maybe a 4 or 5 point win for Kerry.
4 or 5 point win, Conor.
I'd say could get the 8 or 9.
Yeah, I would go along with that. I think whatever it's 8 or 9, I think it'll be 7. It'll be 7 anyways. I think they'll beat the -6, Kerry. And that's just taken, as Johnny Giles says, you can only go on what you've seen so far this year. That's all we can do here as pundits. Right, up next we'll take a look ahead to the qualifiers.
Somebody said it's as ugly as Marty Moore's here for both.
We party in fairness, he wouldn't know a penalty if it bit him in the arse. I mean,
what is the point of this? They swear allegiance to the cult of Cairn.
But I tell you what, you can forget about Sean Kavanagh as far as he's a man.
Is managing Mead at some stage for the rest of your life a pebble in your shoe that you want to get out?
No, I think I've got over that.
Have you?
If I went to do that, sure, who'd keep manners on Joe Brawley on the Sunday game? And you couldn't expose the nation to him on his own, could you?
Qualifiers, lads, and look, to be honest with you, there's a lot of kind of obvious results here, so we're not going to necessarily do predictions, but like Laois and Clare are the only one that you'd actually wonder who's going to win it. The rest are fairly obvious, but I think the talking point with Donegal, lads, is whether Gallagher sticks or twists with all these young fellas that he threw in against Tyrone, you know, because before the game the idea was that they were going so well in the league and these young lads were taking a step up, but the step up to a top 3 or 4 team, you know, like in a Ulster semi-final, clearly was a bridge too far for these young fellas.
Yeah, it's a huge task, and yeah, we have to remember to come up against an experienced team in Tyrone. Now, you know, while Tyrone have plenty of legs in their team, they are experienced and they have young boys coming through, but they still have a good blend there. And you know, I think myself and yourself, Wally, predicted that Tyrone would win that, and Conor got it wrong. So
he got it,
and that's our league
prediction king here.
Oh yeah, he
hasn't been able to make to step up to the championship either.
So he draws. Much respect for Ulster championship.
He's a mirror of Donegal's young lads. Conor is league. He's a league. Man.
Yeah, but what Gallagher will be hoping on the outcome of that game is that the young players that were thrown into that particular match have learned a lot from it and will improve. And I don't think he'll make too many dramatic changes to the starting 15. But what he might do is make one or two switches that might spice things up a bit. But I would expect him to stick with the Trident test throughout the course of the National League and what has proved, you know, to be a successful enough campaign for them so far, but apart from the blip against Tyrone, and I think they will bounce back.
Throwing so many of them in though, like he's throwing 6 or 7, or I think it was actually 7, it was Gallagher, McGee, Thompson, Carroll, Brennan and McHugh. How many is that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It's a lot to throw in. I remember we played back in 1998, we were all still under 21s and we had another year left under 21, and there was 7 of us brought into the Laois senior team, and we played Westmead in Croke Park and we beat Westmead. We scored 16 or 17 points, everybody played well, it was like, oh, we're there. And then the next round we played Kildare. This was Mikko's Kildare in 98 that got to the All-Ireland final, and we went, right, we've a right chance against these. Sure, they blew us away, like it was a men against boys. It was like looking around, Eddie McCormack gave me a run around in the first half. I got taken off, I think maybe halfway through the second half, and like none of our young lads performed, because like you had Noel Garvin going up against Nuxer Buckley, you had me going against Eddie McCormack. See, and it's a completely different world
when you're coming up against experience like Niall Buckley and like Glenn Wren and players like that. It's a different animal,
different world,
totally different world. And that was the exact same scenario for the young boys of Donegal coming up against the experience of their own, you know, totally different animal. It's fine maybe going out against a team who are probably experienced in terms of their age, but less experienced in terms of championship wins. if you understand. So this weekend they're going to face Longford, and that's an opportunity for the young fellas to gain some valuable experience, but also come up against a team that have experienced players in their ranks, but they haven't got that experience of consistently winning championship matches year after year.
And no matter what way you look at it, is the pressure, it's not even the standard of play from the league to the championship, because it'll be a little bit faster, there'll be a bigger crowd, there's so many different factors, but it's the pressure, it's the week before, it's the expectation, it's the constant talk about it, it's that all the eggs in GAA are in the championship basket, and it's not that when you get on the field it's that much different than the last two or three league games outside of a bigger crowd. Like, the standard of play might be a little bit faster, but it's that bloody, it's the tension in the dressing room, it's the tension. There's so many things that a player thinks, right, I'm going great during the league, and then you go to championship and it's like, holy shit, it's not just the match, it's the whole bloody experience of that championship. And for these young fellas, they wouldn't have felt it against Armagh, but then they're driving up to Clonus, looking up the hill, and this is where all the matches that they've gone to as young fellas they were watching, and now they're in it and they're up against a team like Tyrone. And like, I mean, like, some of them clearly were like rabbits in headlights.
Yeah, but that's why I would definitely stick with that team though, because I think three games maybe through the qualifiers might be the best thing for them.
I think he has to stick, you're right, yeah.
I was thinking it probably, it's tough to say because the game was getting away, but I thought he panicked a little bit. They threw on Carl Lacey straight away, you know, in the first half, and I was like, ugh, you know, this obviously isn't part of the plan, but he's just firefighting now. I think Jason McGee probably felt a bit hard done by. I don't think he was doing anything.
Well, I thought that was lousy. He took him off after 31 minutes. Yeah. Now, don't tell me 4 or 5 minutes was going to make too much of a difference there, that he was going that bad. Call him over, give him an instruction just to man mark Kavanagh, give him something to get him to half time and not have that humiliation. I always hate managers, and I think it's their egos why they do it. It's Jose Mourinho effect. It's let's get him off and make it look like I'm rectifying this, and it's embarrassing your player coming to half time. Change him, change his position, move him from midfield to wing forward, give him just a little second chance to get him to half time, especially a 19 year old young fella, and then take him off and not have that humiliation. I really don't get that first half.
I understand what you're saying, but you know, managers don't have that luxury. They have to make what they believe is the right decision.
But
at that
4 minutes from the 35,
yeah,
though,
but
Stevie.
At the same time, you know, Rory Gallagher felt that that was the right move for Donegal at that particular time, and he had to go with it. And I would be a fan of actually making switches at any stage once you believe that they're the right one. I know it backfired in Donegal in that particular game, but you know, as a manager, I certainly wouldn't criticise any manager trying to make a switch to benefit his team at any stage of a game, even if it's after 5 or 6 minutes. If a player isn't up to the standard and up to the speed on that particular day,
you pick them though. Like, and sometimes I can understand the maybe if it's 20 minutes in, and okay, if I give him another 15 minutes here, we're screwed. Like a defender getting the run around. Now I'd switch positions first. I'd give him a second chance. If it was my responsibility to pick this fella, I'm going to give him a chance to get back in the game on somebody else. Then if he's not doing that and we've 10 minutes to go and he's getting a run around, shit, I need to get him off here now. But when it's a young lad 19 and it's 4 minutes from half time, that's my argument on this, that I thought that was a little bit much. And I take your point, Stevie, but I think there's like a scenario here that, Jesus, just move McGee into the full forward line, bring somebody, or you know, but maybe you can't do that as a man. I haven't been as a manager, Stevie. You have.
Yeah, listen, as I say, it is a tricky situation. You certainly don't want to be denting the confidence of a 19-year-old lad, but at the same time, you know, it should have been a confidence boost for the player that he was given a starting 15 jersey in the first place. You know, his responsibility, once he gets that, is to go out and perform and at least break even with his man. It wasn't happening on that particular day, so Rory Gallagher had no choice to make but to take him off. And he could have made many changes at that particular time. It's unfortunate that he was the particular player that he decided to call ashore, and that's just it. There's certain games that go against you in the first half in particular, and from a manager's point of view, you can make maybe 8 or 9 changes to try to make a difference, but within the rules of the game, you can't possibly do that. So, you know, some calls are pretty tough on managers, and they have to make them, and that's just the way it is. And you know, a player can respond to it in a positive way, or they can huff in a corner and let it affect their game. But from me, you know, I think there was a vote of confidence in the player from the offset by giving them a starting 15 jersey.
Yeah, you're in the managers' union now, Stevie. Conan, what do you think?
Well, maybe it's worth remembering that this is Rory Gallagher's first big job. Now, I know he's there 3 years now and he wished McGuinness the whole time, but apart from last year, but you know, this is the first time he would have had that expectation in the county as well, which is crazy considering how everyone was writing him off at the start of the year. But they did so well relatively in the league that everyone thought, Jesus, this, something could happen here. And they were playing the sort of brand of football that I was preaching that could beat Tyrone. So he was going to this game too with a lot of pressure on him to deliver with these boys, the boys that had done so well throughout. But then, like, I was looking at him, I was sort of sitting behind him in the stand, and you could tell he was very nervous as well. So many water bottles lying on his feet, he was picking them up.
Well, he likes doing that now. He's
spitting
doing that every day.
Spitting
yeah.
on his hand,
yeah.
throwing it down, picking it up again. You know, just a little tick you could
he,
see.
You know, he actually, like, when he was playing, he consistently licking his fingers. It was part of his free taking routine. Yeah. Now that he's a manager, he's continuing this on.
Like, he's getting ready to catch a ball.
He's getting himself in the zone.
Yeah, it's just, maybe it is some sort of nervous tick that he does.
But, like, you know, it's, they do have a good team. Like, he's obviously done really well with these boys as well. He's seen them coming through on the race. And like, I know he's managed a club level in Donegal too, so he'll have a real grasp of what he's working with. And you know, if they get over Longford, I think they will, and avoid Mayo in the next round, like, you know, they're in the fourth round again, and they're looking at Down if they lose, or Cork, you know. And yeah. I think they'll be happy enough for that too.
I would agree. Donegal could definitely go on a run now.
Donegal can go on a run, and if you look at the draw that they've been handed, you know, out of all the teams in there, you would have been looking at a Longford at home to Longford, or at home to Sligo.
Now they are the Ulster killers.
They are, of course, but you know, at the same time, they're the Ulster killers against lesser Ulster teams.
Well, you know. Monaghan last year, mate.
Yeah, but Monaghan. I've been saying it all along. Monaghan are
as well. Down and Monaghan last year. Yeah. And Derry
in the past.
Derry 100 different occasions.
There's no doubt about it, but Donegal are a better team than most of them teams.
Look, Donegal are going to win this game. I think we'd be absolutely amazed if that's not the case.
Yeah.
Mayo Derry, lads. We're not holding out too much hope for Derry here. It's in McHale Park. I think maybe there's a kick in Mayo. For some reason, and I'm never one for this reactionary response to a loss, but I don't know if Mayo have it in them to go on a run to the All-Ireland final again this year. Is that a fair call?
I know we've been, you know, huge fans of Mayo throughout the course of this season's podcast, and saying that they will go on a run. They'll certainly, I still believe that they have it in their armour to go to the semi-finals. There's no doubt about it. But, you know, once again getting beat by Galway for the second year in a row will have hurt their confidence. Has to have hurt their confidence. But they're coming in and playing a game at home, and that's what any team getting beaten in the provincial championships want: a home draw to get them back, you know, on the playing field and up and running again. And
yeah, and enough of a break that they're over the loss.
Enough of a break, exactly. And so the heartache is already gone after week one. They'll have got back to themselves in training, you know, rectified the situation, and they'll have built up enough confidence over the last couple of weeks to go into this game against Derry, you know, in high fever and ready to perform again. And based on, you know, we go back to the Cork and Kerry thing, you have to base it on past performances and current results, and you have to say that Mayo is going to probably win this match convincingly.
Conan, you're our Derry expert here. Do you give him any hope?
No. Just leave it there.
That's it.
No, like, it's a nice...
Keith Higgins is obviously suspended, which is a plus for Derry. But then again, on the other side of that, you have Colin Boyle, who didn't start the last day, surprisingly going to come in for him. So it's not exactly that Mayo are going to be massively weakened.
See, it's probably, like, the Derry lads probably think it was a perfect draw for them because if they lose, which they surely will, like, they've gone out of the championship having lost to Tyrone and Mayo, and there's no shame in that. Early summer back to club football, we know how much they love that in Derry.
Off to America.
Yeah. But it's the same sort of thing. Yeah, Steve is right. They go on with no pressure. It's a nice scenario to be in, but they don't have enough in the tank to go and beat Mayo and last on them for 70 minutes in McHale Park of all places.
The problem with Mayo here is that you look at the team against Galway and they obviously lost, and it's a disaster. And then you say to yourself, who are they going to bring in here now? And then you'll think about it and go, well, sure, Aidan O'Shea, because he didn't start. But it's not like they're going to shake up their team with new faces, because really Mayo are working with the same group of players that they have been for the last 3 years. And that is where, you know, they can't... like, is there even an argument to say that the lads that are on the team aren't under enough pressure? I think in the forward line, definitely, because I don't think that they have maybe that kind of axe over their heads, Dublin forwards, for example, who won one bad game and you're off that Dublin team.
Listen, Mayo are a consistent team. They have been a consistent team over the last number of years. they consistently put out a similar team in every championship match as well, and we know what to expect from them. At the end of the day, they could beat Big Galway for the second year in a row, but they beat Big Galway with a man down, you know, by 1 point, so they weren't a million miles away. At spells of that game, you know, they played decent football, but at spells they looked ropey enough and looked quite open at the back, so they have to rectify that, they have to change a few things, and they have to get back in playing well. And the thing is, you know, for me, if I was in the Mayo camp this week, I'd be looking at the Derry game as a challenge. Derry's still a big county, you know what I mean, in terms of football and you know, history, and looking back at teams who have performed. But you know, it's an opportunity for Mayo to play against a team who isn't performing particularly well at the minute, and that's
yeah,
that's a chance for them to get back on the road again. And once Mayo can get on the road, similar to Donegal, if they get one or two results over them, the confidence will come back into the team, and we'll see a different team coming out and performing week in, week out.
Yeah, look, it's just, I don't think they wanted this route to the All-Ireland at all this year. I don't think they planned on it. I don't think they expected it. You know, I didn't expect it. Yeah. I didn't think Galway would beat them, and I didn't see them back in McHale Park hoping for a few good draws, you know. Not, but you're right, Derry are a big name, but they're not a big team, so they are a nice one to chalk off early in the qualifiers at home.
Yeah, it is. It's a long road if you think, oh geez, getting back to September from here, having to get three games just to get to a quarter final. But yeah, when you look at their playing Derry at home, and then it's the same with Donegal, if they avoid Donegal in the next round, it's a nice enough draw. No offence to Leash or Clare or Meath or Sligo.
Wouldn't you love a Donegal Mayo now at this point of the season? I think it'd be fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. Especially after the last league game went, where it was fairly fiery. That could be a nice early qualifier game.
And I should clarify that the A side is not down. It's actually the A side. Once you get round four, the A side are playing the Connacht losers or the Munster losers. So it'd be Roscommon maybe and Cork in round four.
There's a decent route there, yeah, in fairness. So maybe they might get the lucky break they got last year. Last year, they got a terrible handy route to the final, and you're wondering, are they anywhere near the pitch of the game? And then all of a sudden they were twice against Dublin, who, like, I mean, you know, are very unbelievably impressive against Kerry. So as this analysis stuff, it's not a perfect science, really. No, isn't it? Right, Meath and Sligo. When you hear this, I was reading this morning, lads. Meath's qualifier record: they haven't won a game in the back door since 2011, when they beat Galway. Since then, Kildare, Leash, Armagh, Derry and Tyrone twice have sent them packing out of the qualifiers. So, like, I mean, Meath are not a team to dust themselves down. Now, in their defence, a couple of those times have come off the back of hammerings off Dublin in Leinster finals.
Yeah.
So that was definitely the year Leash beat them. It was after them getting hammered.
Beer Armagh beat them as well.
Beer Armagh as well, was it? Yeah, in 2014. And then, so you can excuse those two. And then Tyrone twice, you can nearly excuse that. I know they performed all right away in Omagh. I don't think Tyrone hammered them. It could have been last year, the year before. So based off their qualifier record, it's a disaster. Based off their Kildare performance, it's a disaster, because I was expecting so much more from Meath, and it just looked like a team that, like, I know Andy Mackin, he's a good manager, but I'd say you'd give Meath another chance, because they have to be better than that. But like, they showed nothing that night, absolutely nothing to say. They should beat Sligo at home, but at the same time, Meath are not the potential force in Leinster that Kildare are, for example, like nowhere near it, in fact.
Yeah, I would be interested to hear, like, what was it like in the county camps? Because I know, like, speaking to lads in Derry, they always called it the Dirty Dozen. As soon as they got put out of the provincial championship, there was only 12 or so of them left training. Everybody pissed off, they had injuries, went back to clubs. You know, it was just complete apathy then when they were going through this qualifier.
Yeah.
There
should be no excuse for that in Leinster, Conan, because like every team in Leinster knows we're not winning Leinster.
Yeah.
So like realistically, every team in Leinster is saying we want to get to an All-Ireland quarterfinal. And I know that from experience that you say our aim this year is an All-Ireland quarterfinal. That's an attainable goal. It's not like, okay, you'll say Leinster title or Leinster final, but like realistically, Leinster title is off the agenda. So Meath shouldn't be that team that are like going, right, we're out. Now, they mightn't have expected to be out against Kildare, but their goal of an All-Ireland quarter final, which for a team that's third in Division 2, they should be in the mix for that. They shouldn't be too disappointed that they're out of, you know, that they're out of Leinster.
I think in the manner of which they're beat against Kildare will have hurt them a lot more and might have dented their confidence somewhat. But listen, I have no doubt that they'll bounce back this weekend against Sligo. I think they're a much better team than what Sligo are. They're playing at home as well, which gives them a huge advantage. Mm. And you know, when you come back suffering a heavy defeat like that, there, you want to be playing at home, and you want to, I suppose, prove to your supporters that you aren't a bad team and as bad as what you showed against Kildare the last day out. So I think we will get maybe a response from Meath this weekend and they will come out with a win.
Yeah, okay, so I think we're all going for Meath there. We're all pretty sure we're all going for Mayo in the one before that as well, lads. They were the three very obvious ones. And obviously Kerry, we're all going for Kerry as well. This is one that's kind of up for debate, lads. It's Laois and Kildare. And Laois are just slight outsiders. Laois are slight outsiders in this one. I think they're 6-5 and Clare 10-11 at home. Last year in the qualifiers, they played each other down in Ennis and Laois were home and hosed and Clare got a late rally to beat them by a point. You know, so like Laois weren't going well last year. Laois aren't going well this year. They're at home to Clare. I find this a very hard one to call, and that's why it's so even in the bookies.
I'll help you out then. Laois is going to win it.
You think Laois will win it?
Yeah, I think Laois are going to win it.
Alright.
There's something about Laois that I believe they have enough good quality performers amongst their team that we'll see them over the line in this particular game. Yeah. I know Clare went on a decent run last year, went to the quarterfinals, but you know, for a team and a county like Clare to sustain that and try to replicate that once again is going to be difficult for them. And you know, Laois will have their homework done on the likes of Gary Brennan and players they got there, and I think that they'll come out on top.
Now Brendan Quigley went off injured against Wicklow, so they're sweating over his fitness, and he's vital against Gary Brennan because he could potentially fetch. He's not as good a fetcher as Gary Brennan, but he can at least compete with Gary Brennan. And you know, for the Clare kick out, they then can afford to push up and get Brendan to break off Gary Brennan, and you know, it changes their whole style. Evan O'Carroll went off injured as well, which is a big loss. And I'm always saying with Laois, I can't understand it. When you have Evan O'Carroll and you have Donny Kingston in a full forward line, we saw it very clearly with Down. Down will back two against one. They'll back or three against two. They'll back Harrison and one of the Johnsons against three defenders, a sweeper and two markers, because they give good diagonal ball. Harrison can win it. Why can't Laois, having Donny Kingston and Evan O'Carroll, play those same diagonal balls and back these two big 6'1", 2, Donny Kingston 6'4" with dummy solos, the whole package? Yeah. Why can't they trust them and get that ball down long and stop messing with it? Yeah. Have both wing backs coach like Aidan O'Rourke when you played. You knew when Aidan O'Rourke had the ball, that ball was going diagonal. Tomás O'Shea, a lot of the time, it was going diagonal to Kieran Donnelly. Yeah. You had O'Hanlon the other day for Down. Every time he got that ball, it was almost to the point where it was predictable.
And it wasn't the case that the ball was going in diagonal and away from goal. It was going in diagonal in an area where you could win the ball and shoot. Yeah. You know, and that's the key to playing that type of ball in. Donny Kingston is a fantastic ball winner. He's a fantastic footballer. You know, I've witnessed him numerous occasions over the last couple of years pulling them solo dummies and sticking the ball over the bar with left or right foot. So he's a great talent, you know. So,
but at least having him should have a chance in every game.
It should be. Sometimes it's coached on the training field to get the ball in and as quick and as often as possible. Sometimes I think players just delay, and by delaying by 3 or 4 seconds, you know, the opportunity is almost gone. They should certainly be using Donny Kingston more and utilising his main strength, which is getting the ball in. Let him win the ball. I believe Armagh, you know, have a problem with that at the minute as well. We've got a fantastic ball winner in Andrew Murnan. Great leap, one of the best leaps in the game at the minute. And if they pulverised him with more ball, I think Armagh will get more scores. Sometimes it's just by delaying it by a few seconds, and it just, you know, the move breaks down. And that's the same case with Laois at the minute. They have quality inside players. Get the ball in there as quick and as often as possible.
And the last thing is, they have players like Colin Begley, they have players like Niall Donoher, who's back from injury, who have left feet and can go off the outside of the boot and send a lovely floated one. They have Attride, who can break from deep. They have John O'Loughlin, who can burst from deep. Like, they could develop a game plan based around their strongest play, because I still believe Laois's strongest 7 or 8 players are as good as anyone in the country. Their 15 isn't anywhere near that. But base a game plan around your really strong fellas and get the best out of them. And clearly Laois aren't doing it because they're massively underachieving. I don't know, I don't want to back against Laois, but like, I mean, Clare I think are moving a little bit better than Laois this year, and they're operating at a higher level. They had Kerry in a lot of trouble until the second half. I'd go for Clare. I think Clare's stronger this year than they were last year.
And will they have been buoyed by that performance against Kerry?
I think
62 minutes or so.
I think they were disappointed with the fact that they were drawing at half time and then had a gale force wind in the second half and Donegh O'Connor was gone. So Clare would have been in that dressing room going, this is our one and only opportunity to actually catch Kerry here, and then they didn't do it. So they'll be disappointed. I don't think they'll be as buoyed by getting as close to 6 points as Kerry as they would on another year.
Yeah, I'm with you though. I'm running back Clare, I think. Similar to Tipperary, and I hadn't known a lot about these two counties until they went on these runs last year, and rather than it just being a fluke, I was looking at them thinking, geez, they're actually pretty good teams. Like the forward line of Clare, so fast, so sharp.
Yeah.
Gary Brennan, like, you know, I was comparing them to Anthony Toho last year. Like I don't see how, like, especially after the Kerry performance, there seems to be a lot more momentum in a county like Clare. They're in Division 2, they've stayed up. There just seems to be a lot more sort of feel-good factor around the place, yeah, and a bit more belief in themselves.
Malone is a top-class wing forward. He's fast, he's direct, he's a speed demon. Tubberdy's a finisher. They've Cleary, who's the left-foot taker, who's a finisher as well. They have Claylan Sexton, who buzzes all over the place. Only a young fella. He can get better. Like, they're not all about the one or two players. Now, like, I still think Laois are a match for them player for player. I just think, like, Clare going very well and Laois are going very poorly now.
They are going well, but, you know, there's a big performance in Laois as well.
And there is,
I feel that this weekend we might see it.
Fingers bloody crossed. Stevie's right on this occasion and me and you are wrong, Conan. Right, listen, we've got through every game for you, so I don't want any complaining on Twitter that we're not paying any attention to the qualifiers. You can all shut up and we'll talk to you on Monday. Good luck.
Yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.